Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the show where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I'm Patrick, and I'm back, as always, with my friends Chris.
Hello. Actually, today I'm Chris.
Chris. And my other friend, Steven.
Steven.
Hi. We are here today to talk about the 1997?
Seven.
97 classic, cult classic. Anaconda. But before we get to that, as usual, we're going to do a little horror catch-up. Who wants to go first? What have you guys been watching or experiencing in the horror realm since last we met?
I'll go first. I can fire off a couple. A lot of these are shared experiences, so I don't know how we're going to do this, but I saw 2022's The Coffee Table, which I believe also watched. It's a Spanish film that, like, you kind of can't say what it's about without ruining the hook for it. But I can say that it's the darkest of comedies about a couple with a newborn who are not getting along. And your mileage may vary on whether or not you find this movie entertaining or find it to be a worthy exercise. But yeah, I don't know. Check it out.
What was your mileage?
I mostly enjoyed it. My complaint on our Discord was that, like, I thought it could have been more stressful because of some weird artistic choices with the music and some other things. But at the end of the day, though, I mean, it's a pretty disposable, bleak exercise. But I did enjoy the bickering between the couple at the beginning as they're looking at this hideous coffee table that the husband wants to bring home. What else? Oh, Patrick, you and I saw winner of Dragula Season 3, Landon Sider, perform at Motor City Pride. I should have put saw or see in air quotes because I could not really see the stage anytime that they were performing. I'm told that it wasn't very horror centric, but that there was an entertaining Castaway number.
Yes. Yeah. I had to stand on top of like a wall to see Landon, which I was perfectly willing to do because I loved them on Dragula. I think that was the last season of Dragula that I actually watched, and they were fabulous. AFAB Queen, which I always appreciate seeing that. And their looks were just insanely detailed and creative and inspired on the show. As you said, they didn't really do anything particularly horror-ish at Pride, but they did do one number in costume as Wilson from the Tom Hanks film Castaway, which was extremely funny and impressive.
Oh, when you said that, I thought it was going to be Wilson from Home Improvement. Which would be good. It would be big fence.
Yeah.
And you could move the fence to reveal
turn it side. Yeah. In different directions. Yeah. Maybe even
was Wilson a fence. I never watched him.
He's only ever seen from behind a fence.
Oh, yeah. He's the next door neighbor that Tim Allen talks to when he needs advice, but everything up to his nose is obscured by the privacy fence.
That would be pretty funny and high concept on the exact same level as being Wilson for a drag.
All right, well,
member.
I'm gonna try out for a drag contest.
Yeah,
with that.
You should.
Yeah, you could turn your Zack Snyder's Justice League sandwich board into a fence. And I'll kind of like gently lob it to Chris because we also had a shared experience. I took you down to the Whispering Pines Pet Cemetery one night about a month ago.
You know, we were having a good time. We were actually having some drinks before Patrick's wedding. Mm-hmm. Burying the lead. Mm-hmm. Patrick got married since we last talked. So see, we're putting our time to good use with our reduced output for Amon. We're doing life things. So Patrick got married. He had a rehearsal dinner. We were
wait until you see who gets married next month.
Yeah. And then Steven's like, hey, let's go to the pet cemetery. It's in walking distance. So we drove. And then we were walking. And we went there and we were looking around, just kind of, you know, looking at the graves in the middle of the night. It was not the middle of the night. It was like 10:30, 11 o'clock, but it was dark. And, you know, we have our little phone flashlights on, reading the touching headstones on all these cat graves. Wasn't spooky. I think Steven's dear departed cat, Toby.
Former friend of the show.
Yeah, former friend of the show is out there.
In a mass grave.
Then a truck, like, pulls up, and we're like, oh, that's the owner. Oh, God, he's going to kill us.
I flipped out. Chris was remarkably calm, and I have way more experience with breaking into shit that I'm not supposed to. But I thought for sure we're gonna get shot, or he's gonna call the cops or something.
But we weren't guilty of anything, is the thing. Like, we were maybe trespassing, but we were literally just there to respectfully look at the graves. So this guy spends some time, like, in his car, and I made a joke about how he was getting his gun. And then he comes over with, like, speaking of Tim Allen, he's got, like, the Binford trespassing flashlight with, like, it's like the power drill handle, but it's like a big ass spotlight floodlight thing. He walks over with that thing on, like, high power, and then we're like, hey, how you doing? Anyway, turns out, super nice guy. He's the owner of the pet cemetery, new owner of the pet cemetery.
Yeah. Does he, like, live next door? Like, how is he so on top of this too?
Because it's like his, I think he was out at Aubrey's. He was out at the bar because he had a bag with him. He goes there with his beautiful dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was just kind of coming back to, like, smoke some weed and chill in his workshop. He's got a whole, we got a tour of the place, and he is Tim the Toolman Taylor. He's got all kinds of shit going on there. He's got a full, like, wood workshop and an enormous incinerator. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that they actually did that on site at the cemetery.
Yeah. I mean, well, think about how big a pizza oven is, you know, and that you need a lot more power in an incinerator to turn something as big as a dog into ash.
To turn bones to dust.
Turn bones to dust, like something else we could mention, but we'll save that for the spoiler room. Yeah, anyway, but really cool guy, but, you know, certainly a little bit of an offbeat fellow. He kept saying things about, like, I don't like people very much, and, like, talking about how he was in the Army or the Marines. He was a Marine, and talking about how he used to be a private investigator. Because I was like, yeah, hope we didn't, you know, give you a spook out here after hours. He's like, you can't spook me. I was a Marine. I was a private investigator, all that stuff. Anyway, he gave us a tour. He was super charming, super friendly. Not sure I would want to hang out with him. You know,
we were really trying to angle our way out of there for a while. Like, he was nice, but not somebody I really wanted to, like, stop and chat with for more than 5 minutes. But
on the other hand, we were trying to angle our way out of there, and he was like, oh, no, don't go. Look at this. And then he'd be like, I don't know why I'm showing you all this.
Well, and he did. So, I mean, you mentioned that you were afraid of getting shot, and I feel like you kind of buried the lead. Like, he was armed, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. He
revealed it in the most hilarious way. You could reveal a gun.
My first inkling of this whole story the next morning when I woke up on my wedding day was Steven saying, Chris and I almost got shot last night at the pet cemetery.
I mean, Steven expected that he was going to shoot us from the moment his truck pulled up. I didn't have that vibe, but I assumed that anyone in his position with his, you know, who listens to the podcast he does, drives the truck he does, would have a piece on him when he comes out into the dark to see who's on his property.
You know what podcast he listens to?
No, he said, I listen to podcasts, and I was like, I'm pretty sure he's not listening to Terry Gross.
Pretty sure he's not listening to Amon either. So,
so we're safe.
Yeah.
But I was like, all right, well, you know, thanks for not, you know, pointing a gun at us or anything. And he's like, oh, did you see it? And I'm like, what? And then he pulls a Glock that's just dangling loose in his giant cargo pants pocket.
Loaded, unlocked, no holster.
What?
And I was like, no, I didn't see it.
Pants pocket?
Loose in his pants pocket, no holster.
That's insane.
Yeah. So, but great guy. You know, he says we learned a lot about the economics of pet burial and internment. We learned about how there's, like, some major companies that do hundreds of animals a day, cremation, whatever. Like there's, like, a couple companies that have all the business in Metro Detroit. And then he's, you know, just one guy with a pole barn and an incinerator just who bought the land.
Trying to keep the ground from going sour.
He's just trying to keep the ground from going sour. So there's, you know, I don't know, a little bit more of a personal touch. I can see why you know, if I were into putting my pets in a cemetery, I'd probably call them up. And if you want, he will let you fucking put him in the incinerator. You don't get that at the big box pet cemetery.
The big box pet cemetery.
I got his business card. Maybe we can put his info in the show notes.
Let's just interview him on the show.
All right. I was going to say, like, this is Patreon content. Like, I want to learn everything that you guys learned about the economics of the pet death business,
yeah.
Pet death industry.
What else you got, Chris? Any other horror-related experiences from the last month?
Oh, so people aren't going to like this. I watched Late Night with the Devil. Didn't love it. Didn't love it. Here's the thing, and we just talked about this about something else. Like, I saw this lecture that William Friedkin gave where he said, when I go to the movies, I know I'm about to see a piece of shit because everything I've seen in the last 8 years has been a piece of shit. That's how I feel about Late Night with the Devil. Like, I understand why it gets so much praise, but it gets so much praise because we're just so thirsty and tired and starving and we haven't seen a good movie in 8 years. It's like a little bit creative, a little bit original. There's some good performances. There's some things to like, but I didn't like it. And I'm like, I feel guilty saying that. I feel like I'm like, oh, you don't like horror if you don't like that movie. And it's like, yeah, I see why it got acclaim. I also felt this way about Talk to Me. I was like, I see why this got acclaim.
Talk to Me is a movie that I regularly forget that I've actually seen. And I liked it enough at the time. But
yeah.
So I agree with you about Talk to Me. I mean, I enjoyed it. It was good enough, but it was right in one ear and out the other. I don't agree with William Friedkin, though. I think that's just a cynical, old bastard way. Especially if you're going into a movie and just saying, I know this is going to be a piece of shit. Like, I mean, you're not setting yourself up for success. Yeah, no, listen,
not every movie can be Father Amort, all right? We get it, Billy, we get it.
Hey, I want to like all these movies, and I was excited to see this movie, and the conceit sounded interesting to me, and people really talked it up, and yeah, I don't know. Didn't
That's
like
okay.
It.
You're still a horror fan.
Yeah, that's okay. Right. And then, you know, I feel good. I don't want to rain on people's parade, you know, and I'm not saying anyone's wrong if they
liked it. Especially not in Pride Month. You better stay away from my fucking parades. No, I hear you. I hear you. Like, for me, it's a movie that, like, I was so excited about for, like, a couple of weeks after I saw it. I was lucky enough to see it in the theater, which I think heightened the experience. But then, I watched it again on streaming, and I thought, this is a good movie. It is not great. It felt great when I saw it because there's been such a dearth of horror movies that have been clicking with me lately. So yeah.
So
I'm not going to argue with you. There.
I'm sure it's better than, you know, Blumhouse's Truth or Dare or Night Swim or whatever the fuck.
It's better than fucking Night Swim. I can tell you that.
But I guess if I had one main criticism, it's that so much of it is a slow burn where, you know, which is fine, where it's like, okay, we're going to make this movie somewhat deliberately slow paced and boring. And then there's going to be a horrifying payoff. And it was, you know, getting a little spooky, but then at the horrifying payoff, I thought they undercut themselves by like not keeping it super scary and making some stupid throwaway laugh lines when it mattered most and kind of pissed me off. But hey, good for them. I hope they make another half found footage movie someday. It's better. Maybe they can have AI make one for them.
Well, they're halfway there.
Oh, Patrick, did you update us? I forget.
No.
All right. Well, what have you been up to besides getting married? The biggest horror of it all.
I have been reading a lot of fucking Stephen King. As I mentioned last episode, a month ago or more, I was reading The Stand, which I was excited about at the time, about a quarter of the way through it on our last episode, and was much less excited about it by the time I finished it. You didn't finish it, right, Stephen?
I have not, no.
Okay. I don't know. I appreciated the sort of detail that went into setting up how the plague started and played out, and then it just became extremely dull. There was just a lot of like kind of day-to-day like politics of managing this little like settlement of survivors, and it really lost me, especially for a book titled The Stand. You think you're building up to a big stand, an epic face-off between two, you know, the force of good and the force of evil, which is even on the fucking jacket of the book, and that was also extremely underwhelming by the time you finally got there. Like, I was listening to it again with friend of the show, my sister Brenna, And we were both listening to the audiobook and joking about how far we were into it, because it'll show you the percent completion. And we were like, 70%, still nothing happening. 80%, still nothing happening. 90%, still nothing happening. And then you finally get this stand that is such a short portion of the book. It was weirdly underwhelming.
I remember, spoiler alert maybe, but I think I've heard that this book, I've never read it, I don't know, even know the story. But isn't this the book where Stephen King said that he just got so bored writing it that he decided to just, like, blow everyone up with a bomb?
Yeah. Big spoilers for The Stand, but yeah, that is what happens in The Stand. Yeah. There's, like, a deus ex machina, a totally random, like, nuclear weapon that gets brought into things, and pretty much everybody gets blown up.
Yeah, so even Stephen King thought it was boring and not going anywhere.
Well, but the weird thing is that he thought it was too short. Like, there was, an 800-page version of it that got published, and then he was like, no, there's a lot of essential stuff that I had to cut out of this. Here's the real version. It's 1,100 pages, and it's like, maybe you should have cut it down to, like, 600 or something, because it's very over-padded.
Maybe they should have had Joss Whedon come in and finish it.
What I wasn't disappointed in, though, was I finally read The Green Mile recently at, again, Brenna's recommendation, and that was a banger. I mean, that went hard as fuck. I mean, it's a quarter of the length of The Stand, but it was very moving. It was horrifying. Just very well done. Kind of left a little bit of a mark on my soul, and I'm excited to finally watch the movie, which I have never seen.
Oh, interesting.
But I hear it's very good.
Now, the Green Mile, I'm curious about, because I don't know how it's sold now, but when that came out, it came out like month to month as a serial, like little like 50 to 100 page books, like five of them or something. Like that's a cool concept to break up a novel like that, especially considering how Stephen King so often writes like he's paid by the word.
Yeah. There's a little intro in the collected edition, because it is just a single book now. It's still like broken up by book one, book two, book three. I think there's five or six books. But yeah, he talks about how Dickens was his inspiration for the serialization, which I think is maybe setting yourself up. I don't know. It's a really good book. I want to take shots at him, but I still think it's a little much to compare yourself to Dickens in the intro to your own book. But, you know, Steve loves to write himself a good intro, self-aggrandizing intro. The last thing I want to give a shout out to, because I just think I don't know if people have seen it, and I think it may already be out of theater, so whenever it hits streaming, check it out. But I saw the TV Clow fucking blew my goddamn socks off. It's being marketed as horror, which, you know.
That's what I wanted to ask you about.
It's not super horror, no, but there are definitely horror elements to it, and it was just astonishing. It's really like nothing I've seen. It looks gorgeous and just has an energy to it that feels so singular. It's sad, it's funny, it's beautiful. I loved it. Kind of broke my heart. It's a very, very fucking weird movie. And kind of we complain a lot of the time about this nostalgia craze and how all of a sudden lately everything's about like throwing back to the 80s. This is more about throwing back to the 90s, because we're getting old, but it deals with that in such an interesting and thoughtful way. The characters in the film are obsessed with this show from the 90s, fictional show, and it's more interested with summoning that feeling of nostalgia and the impact it has on you as a person, more so than just like pressing your nostalgia button. And I liked the dive into nostalgia and how the media that you obsess over as a child can have an effect on you as an adult. But fucking loved it, so check that shit out if you haven't already. And that leaves me in the position of segueing from I saw the TV Clow to Anaconda. And I have no way to do that. So let's talk about Anaconda.
Anaconda.
Listen, I saw the TV Clow when I watched Anaconda on VHS after renting it from
perfect.
Food Town back in the days when you could get your movies and your groceries from the same goddamn establishment. And I had a blast with it.
Talk about nostalgia, like memory unlocked.
I assume that Food Town is like a hyper regional reference.
Yeah.
It's going to sound insane to our audience.
All but three of our listeners.
We went to Food Town.
Fucking Food Town.
Rented Anaconda.
What are we going to call our grocery store? I don't know. It's kind of like
a town.
Like a town.
Food.
It's got a food in it.
You know, good for them.
So yeah, let's hear a little bit about your histories with this film, because as I confessed last episode, this was my first time seeing it. Bubble Child missed this in the 90s. So we heard a little bit about Steven renting it at Food Town. Chris, what was your experience with Anaconda?
I never really saw it. I caught like, I don't know, 5 or 6 minutes of it on TV once during the climax. So like I saw J-Lo, I saw Ice Cube, I saw John Voight, I saw some spoilers about what happens to them, and that's it. That's all I saw. And I saw that who knows how long ago, and I was like, well, this movie doesn't look very good, and went on about my life never expecting to have to think about it again.
And Steven, you saw it as a child, I assume?
I have to have seen it like around the time it came out on VHS. I don't remember with who, but it could have been my next door neighbors, because we used to like to watch like really bad horror movies, and like our parents would let us rent them. You know, like we would watch like all of the Leprechaun movies in a row and shit like that. And we knew that this was like not a very well reviewed movie, and that it looked absolutely ridiculous, and that it had J-Lo and, you know, Ice Cube in it. So I think like even at that young age, I watched it to laugh at it, and it absolutely delivered.
So to set it up, we've got a group of filmmakers who are in what country, actually?
I assume Brazil, because they're tracing the Amazon River.
Yeah, yeah.
They're somewhere in the Amazon jungle.
Yeah.
Well, first we're given a title card,
which
on
is
this film.
I did not remember this. And if you tell me that anacondas eat their prey and then regurgitate it to eat it again, movie you better deliver.
And I will
talk about it in the spoiler.
I was really mad that they weren't going to deliver on that.
Wink, wink. Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I Googled that immediately because I was like, that sounds insane. There's
is it
no
true?
No, it absolutely isn't. And of course, like the first thing that comes up when you Google that is references to Anaconda, because this is the only like...
Is Anaconda based on a true story?
Yeah, it's like two paragraphs of text. That's way too much. It's like... Anacondas are real snakes. They are the most they are the Joker of the rainforest. And what you're about to see is very real.
The Joker of the rainforest is John Voight.
Well, we'll get to that.
Famous Latino actor John Voight. But anyways, we got a group of filmmakers who are taking a boat down the Amazon to attempt to document some reclusive tribe that I assume
the
is
people
also
of the mist
completely made up. Yeah,
it's like the most generic name you could possibly come up with for a lost tribe.
Yeah, what are the Shiri Shama or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, which hopefully is made up. Yeah, because otherwise I'm just being an idiot over here taking a stab at the name of an actual tribe.
You mean you
tribe.
Don't know the name of every lost tribe in the Amazon that's never been contacted before? Fucking racist.
But it's got big.
Cannibal Holocaust.
No, Fitzcarraldo, the Werner Herzog movie. But no, it's like there's a destroyer lyric. Like it wasn't the movie; it was the making of Fitzcarraldo. So this feels like the Burden of Dreams, where they're trying to shoot the movie Fitzcarraldo in the rainforest, and they're this like tribe comes out of nowhere and starts like assassinating people, or at least firing arrows at them. And there's all these like deadly threats of snakes and things like that. Mm.
Well, there's no tribe to be seen in this film.
That's true.
Rather late in the game, but they're going down the river. We got literally, I think, one of the most 90s casts that we've seen on this show, other than I Know What You Did Last Summer. Like we got J-Lo, we got Ice Cube, we got John Voight. We got Owen Wilson, baby Owen Wilson. Eric Stoltz.
Yeah, we've got the guy who...
David Hyde
from
Titanic, Jumanji, and what's the other thing he was fucking in? Another like 90s staple that's escaping me right now. But what a cast. Anyways, they're going down the river and they run into John Voight.
Before that, even though, we get a little bit of Danny Trejo action.
Oh, that's
at the top of this picture.
Baby Danny Trejo somehow looking older when he was young than he does now, when he's like a wrinkled, pruned face motherfucker ball sack.
We have better moisturizers and things now. You know, you can preserve yourself. I feel like people look better as they age. Yeah.
But yeah, that was bizarre. He gets eaten by the anaconda in the fucking opening moments of the movie. And you've got some Evil Dead shit where the Anaconda's approach is signaled by like a POV shot that's like
got a lot of snake
shaking
POV
and snaking and Dutch angling through the yeah, water.
For a movie called Anaconda, they do a lot of work to not show you the Anaconda because it looks so bad.
Agree to disagree.
Let's get this out of the way right now because I also agree to disagree.
Okay. You thought the Anaconda looked great.
I didn't think it looked great.
I thought it looked like shit when I saw it when I was a kid. Now I'm looking back and I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm also comparing this, and this will be an interesting conversation maybe at some point during this episode. Like, fuck, like, the Sharknado movies and like these like creature features that are like setting out to be dumb and don't really care to give you like entertaining characters or coherent story. It looks better than that. It looks better than some of these shark movies that came out like last year.
Fair.
Or yesterday.
Or some of the shark movies we watched for this shit.
I like it. Yes, it looks awful a lot of times, but in like a charming sort of way. And I appreciated that there was a variety of methods they used to show the snake.
Yeah.
Like they only really should like show it, pull back and show you like the obviously CGI snake when they really need to. Yeah. It looks a little silly. It doesn't move with the actors' bodies well, but for 97, for a movie that generally looks pretty cheap, I think they did a good job.
When did Jurassic Park come out? Was that 94?
93.
And when did The Mummy come out?
99.
Oh, fuck.
It looks better than The Mummy.
I think it looks better than The Mummy, yeah. And I think I agree with Steven that they do a decent job of like switching between animatronic / puppet and a CGI snake that doesn't look great, but looks way better than I expected it was going to based on what I've heard. But counterpoint.
Yeah, I'll let you have that. I mean, sure. It seemed to me like, look, yeah, Sharknado looks like shit, but like those movies are made by like some kid vaping using his MacBook Pro to make the shark, right?
Like on this a is budget a, of like $500.
Yeah, this is they obviously spent some money on this and $40 million this thing to look good, and I think it feels like they saw Jurassic Park and they're like, oh yeah, snake will be easy. And you know, there's a little bit of like mixing animatronic and CGI elements like in Jurassic Park, and the animatronic looks great. You see it in close up sometimes, but yeah, the movement of this thing, it's incredibly hard to believe it's a real animal at any point.
I mean, yeah, I agree with that, but also like it's so like mythologized within the movie itself, including that ridiculous title card, that I don't believe this is a real animal to begin with. Like, I don't even believe I've never seen it. Well, I've probably seen a photo of a real anaconda. I don't remember what it looked like, but I don't believe an anaconda looks anything like this motherfucker in real life.
They actually did use a real anaconda for a couple of shots in this.
What?
No. You're kidding me? Get out. But you wouldn't know because you've never seen one.
I'm looking one up right now just out of curiosity. Don't show me. They better not show me a picture of the fucking anaconda.
All pictures from the movie Anaconda.
No, you know what? Actually, its weird ass face kind of looks fairly similar in real life. They broadened it in a way it looks weird, but whatever. Steven mentioned Sharknado, and I was kind of curious just on a general level, like how you guys feel about creature features in general. Are there any that like work for you, I guess? Because generally, yeah. I think of this as a genre that is sort of interesting to me, rarely scary, because it's usually so ridiculous. It's a ridiculous genre, really.
I mean, I thought about the Creature from the Black Lagoon a lot watching this, a movie that I adore. Mm-hmm. I mean, like most of the early Universal monster movies or the old Val Lewton movies, Cat People. I love creature features, but I agree with you. Like it's very easy for them. It's hard to find like the right balance of tone. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes even the Roger Corman ones, like Humanoids from the Deep or Piranha, like are like a little too goofy for my taste. I'm like, you could stand to be a little bit scarier, a little more thrilling. I thought this nailed it.
Mm. This has got the Anaconda. Anaconda.
I thought it because it's got this from the get go. This high camp energy about it. With you know everybody's got like a weird accent or like a you know outsized personality, but there was still like a healthy sense of adventure and I don't want to say terror. I was never afraid of this movie or of the Anaconda, but. I thought it worked, and I do like, yeah. Give me an alligator, give me a giant snake.
Just do it well.
Just do it well. Yeah. Yeah. Have some fun with it, yeah. And have some personality. Like actually try to entertain. Unlike these like Sharknado movies that are just made for a quick buck, mm-hmm. You know, and are like intentionally bad.
But also, I was kind of thinking about that after I watched this, because, like, yeah, we've disparaged those movies on the show and in private as well. But also, that's, like, part of the grand tradition of these movies, too. Like, the 50s creature features, 60s creature features were just turn-of-the-crank bullshit. You know, like, I feel like Sharknado is just following a grand tradition.
The difference is, and so I'm not a student of the creature feature genre by any means, but, like, I feel like Sharknado and those types of, like, asylum movies, like Steven said, the you have to find the right tone. And I think it's important not to be too serious, but also to take what you're producing seriously enough.
Yes.
That it's not like you're just playing a joke on the person who's taking the time to watch it.
You know? That's a really good way to put it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, Sharknado 4, isn't it crazy that you're going to spend an hour and a half watching this and we got Charlie Sheen to be in it?
You know? Where it's like solely a meme movie.
Yeah. Like, so, like I said, most creature features I've seen are boring as hell or too goofy.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, I'll plug one of my favorites. Man's Best Friend, starring Lance Henriksen.
Oh, right.
I got
do you have that on 4K?
Right there.
Oh, DVD.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even know it's on Blu-ray.
It's on Blu, Scream Factory.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, Christmas is coming up. Yeah, that's fun. So it's about Lance Henriksen is a doctor who's making genetically modified dogs, and he's made this dog that's like, I don't know if it's for a military application or what, but he's like, we've put the genetic traits of all the world's most ferocious animals into this dog and made it hyper intelligent. And then a young journalist comes in and like does an expose on the lab and ends up adopting this dog and taking it home. And so Lance Henriksen is trying to find his killer dog. Meanwhile, she's like in love with this cute little puppy that's actually like, you know, can grow claws and climb trees like a tiger and is super smart and is trying to kill people.
Sounds great.
Man's Best Friend. Check it out. 4 stars.
I think the best ones for me are the ones that, yeah, take it fairly seriously. Like, I mean, Jaws, I think, is a pretty obvious one. But
The Fly?
So, okay, this is what I was thinking about when you said Creature from the Black Lagoon. Do we make a distinction between, like, creature feature? Because when I think creature feature, I think, like, a creature that actually exists that becomes horrifying. Like the giant spider or a shark or whatever. But, like, Creature from the Black Lagoon, I guess, strikes me more as a monster movie. But that's just a personal distinction. I don't know if there's any, like, obviously there's no universally agreed upon definition.
Let me bring
it
back to Netflix for a second.
Yeah.
That Blood Glacier. Remember that one?
Barely.
Vaguely.
It was the Thing knockoff that was like a German film or something.
Oh, right.
Or a Swedish film or something.
There's like a mosquito.
There's
right? All
kinds of creatures in that, I think. But
you think that, I'm not gonna be able to verify.
Anyway, but that I would say that was absolutely a creature feature. Because it was all about these creatures. Oh, they were all like monsters, not based in. I don't know. Maybe they were though, because you had that same kind of thing where it's like, oh, these are all naturally occurring animals that have mutated or something.
Right. That's what I think of when I think of creature feature. Is like it's a normal animal, except even worse.
But so is man. Is a normal animal that sometimes turns into a monster.
Halloween is a creature feature.
Serial killer. Yeah, like slashers are creature features.
I don't know.
I don't know about
that. You know, there's some gray area there, I think.
I think it needs to have like it needs to have features of that are similar to another kind of creature if it's going to be a humanoid thing. Like the creature from the Black Lagoon is like humanoid, like, you know, kind of like has like a man's type of body, but he also has gills and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's indisputably a creature.
Obviously a creature.
And it's indisputably a feature.
Cujo,
no arguing
Cujo
that.
Is another great creature.
Oh my god, Cujo is...
That's what I thought like, of when you said man's best friend.
Cujo is the poor man's best friend.
Oh.
I think it's the other way around. I mean, I haven't seen
No, man's you're best absolutely
friend.
Right.
Cujo is great.
Yeah, almost surprisingly so. Anyways, tell us what you think your favorite creature features are, and also what you think a creature feature is on our Discord, which is in the show notes, or on our social media. Anyways, Chris, I interrupted you.
I'm not talking to you.
Talking
to the listener.
No, I'm talking to the listener.
He's asking the creatures listening.
Breaking the fourth wall, as they say.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Malcolm.
Yes, exactly.
Let's summarize a little plot here. Well, first, you know, you got the cast, and this cast is just a bunch of, I mean, maybe you'll disagree with me on this point, too. With one major exception, this cast, dull as hell.
Oh, you mean like the characters?
The characters.
Yeah.
The cast
it's like Circle.
It's like Circle, only they have, at least in Circle, they have, well, no, it's like that. They have one trait.
You got the black guy, you got the posh English guy, you got the, I don't know, what else do you have?
You got the young lovers.
Young lovers.
Mm-hmm. You got the scholar, then you got J-Lo. And it's not just the black guy. It's,
J-Lo, a classic archetype.
Well, it's not just the black guy either. It's Ice Cube, because the first thing he says is...
Oh, my God. Oh, he is playing Ice Cube.
Yeah, they're like, what's up, man? And he's like, today is a good day.
Like, it's his first line in the movie. I lost my mind.
I didn't even notice that.
Because I didn't understand that reference when I was like 9 or 10 or whatever. I saw this. I could not believe that's how he introduced himself.
That's insane.
There actually might be a second It Was a Good Day reference, or maybe just Ice Cube reference in general. I gotta figure out.
Wait, okay, what is Never Touch a Black Man's Radio from? Because I like was anticipating that line being in this movie because he makes a big deal out of...
That's from Rush Hour.
Oh, that's right. But I was anticipating it being in this movie because he makes a big deal out of what's his name? David Hyde, I think, fucking with his radio. And I was like, oh, this is the movie that must be from. But no, it's not.
Well, all right. So there's the part where...
It would
where,
fit right in, though.
There's the part where John Voight... They will eventually meet John Voight. John Voight kills a wild boar. And he's like, this is food for 3 weeks. And Ice Cube is like, food. And that's, you know, It Was a Good Day. Mama cooked a breakfast with no hog. Because I think Ice Cube had converted to Islam, or maybe still is Muslim.
What?
And whoa.
Did not eat pork.
Wow.
And so I feel like that's deliberate too in this movie, where they bring on the hog on board. And
this, see, this
like,
is
deep.
This is
that.
A great movie. Lots of rewatch value.
It's a layered text.
Yeah.
These deep are text. Great movies. Yeah,
this is deep shit.
But they're going down the river and they're. You know, ostensibly trying to film a documentary, and this is why it reminded me of Cannibal Holocaust a little bit.
I thought about that a lot, too.
Although Cannibal Holocaust is much better, I would say.
I still haven't seen that shit.
But, like, they could not be on a less...
Eli Roth made that, right?
Yeah, no, he made the... God damn you. You had me going. The people in the movie made it. They all died. Their documentary could not be more dull, and they could not be more dull about it. It's very, like, I don't know. It's like the first scene of, like, a Tomb Raider video game, but then it goes on for, like, 30 minutes.
Well, they don't have a plan. They don't really know how to get to where they're going. They don't seem to know if this tribe even really exists or if they will be approachable.
Yeah.
So, in a way, it's great for the film that they ran into John Voight.
Well, look, I loved that, too, because I'm like, okay. Great, we're right in the action. Anaconda kills somebody in the first minute, and then like we get our character set up. You know, for better or worse, you know who all these bland archetypes are in like 2 minutes, and then you're on the river.
You can keep track of them because they're all people who have become famous since, or were famous prior. Then they've run, and I forget, I think they run into John Voight like they run into Billy Zane in fucking Dead Calm, where he's like on a, that's a too deep of a reference.
Yeah, I don't know. The
maybe if you were talking about Dodd Calm, I'd know what you were talking about.
They run into him on a derelict boat, river boat. And he's like, oh, thank God you're here. This happened. I got a whole fucking story. Here's my guy.
And we should clarify, like, he plays a Paraguayan. I don't know what you call it.
Yeah, he says he's from Paraguay.
Yeah.
From Paraguay.
And and he does this.
His mouth is always, like, downturned in this rictus of confusion.
He does this, like, Latin accent the whole time that is... I mean, it's not a terrible accent necessarily. It's just terrible because it's John Voight who has... I mean, I checked myself. I was like, okay, maybe John Voight actually has some kind of like Latin American heritage. Let me look into this. No, he doesn't.
I don't know what he's trying to play, but
I don't either.
But it's delicious. I loved it. Like, you might even be on the wrong track to be like, oh, this he's trying to do a Paraguayan accent. Like, I think he's just trying to... talk as weird as... I think he used Christopher Walken as a model, actually.
He's doing a Latin accent.
I thought about De Niro in... my God, why? Like, how many brain cells just suddenly evaporated?
I thought about fucking Sean Penn in Carlito's Way. That's what I thought about.
Viggo Mortensen.
Oh, sorry. Oh, right, right. Viggo, that's right. Yeah.
That's good.
But I think you and I also disagree about.
Oh, but what a delicious performance by John Voight. Thank God.
Thank God.
Thank no, God he's in this
having,
movie.
He's having fun.
He's camping it up.
Yeah.
He's no, this is the this is where we talk about tone. Like the tone of this movie I thought was just so fucking dull, and I was like, this movie needs to like pick a lane if it's going to be like a serious fucking thriller or it's going to be campy. And it really, it didn't pick a lane. I don't think for most of the movie, John Voight picked his lane. John Voight is doing what Uma Thurman did in Batman and Robin, where he's like, he's the only one who got it. And it's like, you know, this is what we're going to do with this material.
I could see that. I see him going for broke more than the others in the same way that Uma does in Batman and Robin. I think the movie, like Batman and Robin, knows what it's doing more than the rest of the actors do.
That's possible.
I think the rest of the actors, like George Clooney and whoever else in Batman and Robin, think they're doing something a little more serious, but I think the movie is not trying to be as serious as everybody else is trying to make it.
Yeah, I mean, everyone else on the cast is just playing it way too straight.
Yeah.
And like I said, they don't have a lot of character. And this guy...
And Ice Cube. Ice Cube, I think, also gets it. But also only in the sense that Ice Cube's like, yeah, I'm here to play me. And
yeah, he's almost like a comic relief character.
That. Yeah.
I mean, he calls the snake a bitch.
He does.
Which, to be fair... I was thinking of Cape Fear. That's the De Niro performance I was thinking of that reminded me a bit of our guy.
That was what leapt to mind when you said that. And then I was like, I was thinking you were talking about accent. And I was like, he doesn't. Well, no, I guess he does a really exaggerated Southern accent in that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty wild.
But he's so cool. John Voight.
Yeah. Cool. Great politics, that John Voight.
Oh, well, listen, we can get into his patriotism. But
he's so creepy in this.
I loved it. I was legitimately like rooting for John Voight for most of this movie.
What?
Yeah, I get that. I totally get that.
Because he had an interesting So John Voight, all right, back
to
the plot.
Villain.
He's the villain. He's the villain for
sure. The snake is not the villain. The snake's just trying to live.
Is he the villain, though?
He is the villain. And I was thinking about that, too, because since there's so little snake in this movie, I was like, wouldn't this be interesting if they were just on this boat together? It was more of a thriller, and there's this crazy guy who's leaning up the river because he wants to catch a giant snake, and they all think he's fucking crazy, and then they find the Lost Kingdom, and there's a giant fucking snake there. I don't know. It wouldn't be great. That's how I rewrite the movie. It would suck.
Wait, that's pretty much what the movie is.
There's a giant snake statue.
Well, we know there's a giant snake, and the snake's like attacking them throughout the movie. But
you want the snake to be like more at the end?
A surprise.
Oh. You want the movie to not be called Anaconda.
Yeah,
basically.
Be called Anaconda.
Gotcha.
Just like
that would be sick.
It's basically I want Dead Calm, but Billy Zane keeps talking about
a snake. What the fuck is
Dead Calm?
Yeah, you said it was too deep of a reference, so you retracted it, and now you're talking about it again.
What is Dead Calm?
Dead Calm is Sam Neill and Nicole Kidman yachting, and they find Billy Zane marooned, and they're like, oh, thank God you saved me, but he is a bad man. It has one of the most...
Oh, isn't that a remake of Ripley, Tale of Mr. Ripley?
No, this came out in like 89.
No, but that story goes back to like the 50s or something.
No, Talented Mr. Ripley is something totally different.
Okay.
Sorry.
I was going to say, because it sounds... Anyway.
Dead Calm is one of the most horrendous and distasteful scenes I've ever seen in a movie.
Whoa.
Anyway, but John Voight basically takes over this. So they're just floating along, trying to make their movie. Their whole methodology is very unclear. They run into John Voight, and John Voight basically deceives them into going on a snake hunting expedition because he is a fortune hunter who trades in big snakes.
Yeah, he's like, I know these rivers. This is the best way to go. Where
you gotta
you're
do the
going.
Accent.
No, I'm not doing the fucking accent.
I know these rivers.
Oh, my God.
I know these rivers.
You know what? I was doing it in the shower today, but I don't know if I can bring it out for the mic.
I want to talk like him the rest of my life.
Talking to my anaconda.
Oh, my God. Without me, you'll be dead 3 days. I guess it is sort of a South American accent.
It is 100% that.
All right. It doesn't read like that.
He went to Mexico one time and he's like, I'm going to talk how like Mexicans spoke to me in English because I'm playing a guy from Paraguay.
Yeah.
It's 100% that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty Looney Tunes.
Yeah. It's like a bad stereotype of a.
Well, now I regret doing it. Now I regret doing
it. No, yours did, but yours didn't sound anything like it, so it's okay. Anyways, yeah, he leads them the way he wants to go find the snake, which mm-hmm. is not what they're out to do.
No. But what are they going to do? Because they're pretty much, I mean, they don't know what they're doing on this river.
They have no fucking
he idea. Does, and he's just, he's street smart. He's like the Terminator, too. Like,
well, and he's in league tricks. With their boat captain.
Yes.
Who is actually a native, I think.
Yes.
Like something. Brazilian native or whatever. Yeah, which I don't know what the actor actually is, but whatever.
Well, you don't need to be exactly what you're playing in every movie, right?
Not in 97.
definitely not in 97.
They had Danny Trejo. I think Danny Trejo was like yelling in Portuguese.
Yeah.
Wasn't he? I don't know.
I don't fucking know.
Who knows?
I don't care.
At least Danny Trejo is brown, which John Voight is not. So
John Voight is so not brown.
God,
I just found him so captivating. I could not get enough John Voight in this movie.
Same.
Gone for John Voight for like best. You would have said John Voight should win the 1997 Best Actor Oscar over Leonardo DiCaprio and James Cameron's Titanic.
Well, Leonardo DiCaprio didn't win, so yes, I would say John. I don't know who won, but John Voight should have won. And
you don't know who won. You're not.
He
like still
would have won over
it.
Leo.
He should win the Spirit of Jay.
Well, whoa. He could.
Spoiler alert for 6 months from now.
but what's his face? Jonathan Hyde. This movie came out the same year as Titanic.
Yeah.
He was probably on the set of Titanic as fucking, I think he plays John Jacob Astor in that movie.
I think that's
No, he plays the White Star. Does he play Astor or the White Star Line executive?
I looked him up earlier. I'm pretty sure it's Astor.
Yeah. Anyway, he was probably on there watching the fucking clock on the staircase being like, fucking 20 minutes, I gotta be on Anaconda. Going back and forth like Spielberg doing Schindler's List and The Lost World back to back or whatever it was.
Where was Titanic shot? Wasn't it in England
somewhere? No, it was shot on Baja Peninsula, California.
Oh, okay. I wonder where this was shot. Anyway.
Georgia, it looks like. Who knows?
Does anybody have anything else to say before we go to the spoiler... Before we blow up the spoiler wall and go further down the river? No?
Okay. No, I don't think so.
Steven, what's your review? View it, cue it, or screw it.
5 stars, A+. View it.
5-bagger.
This is 5 bags of popcorn and five little baby snakes. There's a lot of baby snakes in this too. No, it's just a fun movie that like this makes a compelling case for me doing the thing that a lot of people are doing now and like picking up a VCR from a garage sale to watch Anaconda on like a hot summer night and indulge in the nostalgic glow of it. I just think it's a blast. Fun, silly movie. Takes itself just seriously enough. Snake looks fucking excellent. I won't hear otherwise. View it, Patrick.
I mean, since you mentioned the snake again, another early CGI movie that this reminded me of that is so much worse than this is fucking Alien 3. I forget what year that came out, but the fucking alien looks like shit in that.
Might have been the same year, pretty close to it.
I think it was Alien 3 was 95, I think.
Okay. All right. So it has a little more excuse. Whatever. That's a tangent. I will also give a view it. I had a lot of fun with this. I mean, it's a movie about a killer anaconda, and it gives you just about all you could ask for out of that premise. The conclusion was very fun, very stupid. It's just a fun, silly creature feature to watch. Chris?
Alien 3 came out in 92.
Oh, okay. Whoa, so way more excuse for how bad the CGI alien looks in that.
Sorry, I'm going to have to give it a screw it. I wish I had the same experience that you guys had with this movie. I thought it was dull, dull, dull. Now, John Voight adds so much great stuff to this movie. I mean, can't go wrong with John Voight. And then the ending, yeah, the last 15 minutes, I thought it really sort of found its tone and identity. But so much of this is just spending time with these really thin and dull characters on a boat and not a lot's happening. And I just wish that those parts had been a little more interesting. But I mean, Creature of the Black Lagoon has this problem too. If I recall, there's like a bunch of characters on a fucking floating boat. And whenever you're not seeing the creature, they're just sitting there like, oh yeah, gonna take some notes in my book.
Oh yeah.
You know, so not specific to this movie, but, no, I wish it had been either more fun or better as a serious movie. And it was just kind of in that messy middle that we've seen so many movies fall into before. Nothing knew what it was doing, except for John Voight, our greatest acting treasure and political voice. So screw it.
I could see it taxing my attention a little more if it lasted like a minute longer than it does, but it's under an hour and a half, which,
yeah,
you know, I always just love barely when that under happens. The wire. Yeah. Anyways, hey, if you like our show, go follow us on social media. We are at Amoncast, Ehmoncast, on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Check out our Discord. There's a link to it in the show notes. We have Amon fans, horror fans from all over the world in there talking about the latest episode of our podcast, talking about whatever other horror they are watching or reading. And it's a really delightful little community. So go check that out if you so desire. Lastly, please go to your podcast provider of choice and leave us a review. We love to see the feedback and it helps people find the show. All right, I just opened this this chest and there's a ton of dynamite in it. Do you guys want to go dynamite that?
Is that real dynamite?
I don't know.
Sorry, I can't do an Owen Wilson voice, but
is that real dynamite?
That's pretty good. Yeah.
We're gonna blow this wall. We're gonna go to the spoiler room.
So we're gonna follow Ersatz Owen Wilson and Ersatz John Voight down to this wall, blow it up, and see what's beyond that on the river in the spoiler room. So join us. Yeah, what was that deranged video that he put out?
He puts a video out like every month.
Oh, really?
Where he's like, Americans, this is the most important election. I'm so glad we have a strong, noble leader like Donald John Trump. They're boring as hell. He should use the character from Anaconda to spice them up. Like, look, man, without Donald Trump, this country won't last 2 months. Bring it back in.
Let's bring it in.
Welcome back. We opened up that treasure chest, and sure enough, real dynamite real in dynamite. The box. We blew up the fucking wall, and we have continued on down the river. Wow. And
we're in the spoiler room.
We're in the spoiler room, exactly. So what is there to spoil about Anaconda?
Well, there's a lot of shit that we haven't talked about that I wouldn't even say are spoilers. So our guy, Eric Stoltz, gets taken out by a poisonous wasp or something that John Voight has put into the mouthpiece of his
Is that scuba. What he did?
Yeah.
And he disappears for almost the entire movie. And I swear to God, at one point, I actually paused it. And I was like, did I miss something? So I Googled, does Eric Stoltz die in Anaconda? And then as soon as I hit play again, he showed up in bed. They check in on him every once in a while in what seems like horribly 80-yard... Like
you jumped the gun, man, because like John Voight fucking tracheotomies him, and then he's like, he's gonna be all right.
Yeah, he does the classic like ballpoint pen tracheotomy thing, and he just lies in bed and like watches better movies while everything else is happening.
Yeah, he's very out of commission for this, but yeah, it is revealed much later in the film that John Voight set him up. And yeah, oh, so he put a wasp in, like, the scuba suit, because I was trying to figure out how exactly that happened.
I thought he said he engineered everything except the wasp.
No, he definitely confesses to the wasp, because I forget who it is. It's like, what? Like, their jaw drops when he's like, where do you think the wasp came from?
See, he's a genius. That would explain why he got stung by a wasp while underwater. I was like, oh, they got some crazy stinging wasp that swims and that anaconda
no.
land.
But there is, and this is another thing I wanted to Google and didn't get around to it, but there's also, I think Eric Stoltz has the line that there's, he's not worried about the snakes or the piranhas or anything when he goes into the water in the first place. He's worried about some kind of tiny little fish that swims up your urethra and then expands with a bunch of like spikes and stakes its claim up in there. Ooh. I don't know if that's a real thing or not.
I don't either, but that definitely got to me. It was one of only two things in this movie that actually like made me shudder a little. And the other was the wasp being in Eric Stoltz's mouth, because I just it. And I think like the Silence of the Lambs ruined me for this, but that scene where they pull the moth out of the dead girl's mouth just always fucks me up. And I think it just like triggered memories of that when they're like yanking this giant wasp out of his mouth.
Oh, it's okay to have been scared when they took the wasp out of Eric Stoltz's mouth. You don't have to compare it to a lesser film.
A lesser film.
Just did it better.
But yeah, I mean,
yeah. Getting constricted by an anaconda is pretty terrifying. That kind of gave me the heebie-jeebies.
Oh my God. When it's just like killing a puma for fun at the beginning of the movie too, and it squeezes its eyeball out.
Mm-hmm. That was hilarious.
That was a pretty well done sequence.
It's a PG-13 movie.
So, is it really? Oh, so interesting. I actually disagreed. I was watching that and I was like, this is just like chaos filmmaking. This is like when you're trying to communicate something and you don't know how to, so you're just like shaking your camera everywhere and showing really chaotic shots of like panther, snake, and then, oh, dead panther. Okay, I get it.
There's a little bit of that. Like it, this was weird, but like some of the shots are in black and white as like, I think we're supposed to like feel that the panther is losing its breath or its consciousness or something. There's like random shots of black and white in that sequence where they're going back and forth with each other.
I did not notice
it's
that.
It's probably cut down to avoid the R rating.
Probably, yeah.
It's like when Kill Bill, when everything goes black and white.
But I thought it was cool. I like that the snake kind of gets its own little
Kill Bill, famous PG-13 film.
Well, it was going to be an NC-17.
Oh.
But they were like, all right, we'll have the part where she slashes 80 guys be black and white.
Whoa, did they really do that to avoid an NC-17?
Yes, I didn't know that.
Huh, that's interesting. Yeah, so anyways, we covered the panther death scene.
We got
and
the panther, we got the wasp. What are some of the other kills in this?
Oh, Owen Wilson. Owen Wilson, when Owen Wilson gets grabbed by the anaconda, and then this is the worst CG in the movie, but also I shrieked. I like laughed out loud by myself in my house. Like you see an underwater shot of the anaconda like swimming past the camera.
Oh,
and you can
my
see
God, yes.
The very clear impression of Owen Wilson's like screaming face pressed up against its belly as it swims by.
That was great.
Amazing.
He's like Han Solo and Carbonite.
Yeah, exactly. That's the perfect reference point. That was great.
My favorite scene, John Voight's in it.
Oh, shit.
Duh.
Was no shit. When... I mean, John Voight's completely been outed as a villain now. Because someone is dead. Oh, it's Owen Wilson. Yeah, Owen Wilson is like the first of the main cast to die. And John Voight's like, listen, like, look at me. Look at me. I am the captain now.
Yeah.
And then J-Lo goes and visits him in the little
pilot house
of the boat.
Yes, tries and to do a little seduction act on
she's
him.
She's coming on to him.
Yeah.
And you know that she's got ulterior motives, you know, but he seems to be fallen for it. And he's like, it's been so long since I had a woman.
Only snakes for many years.
And then they
many decades
then they
the
start
snakes.
Making out and... Ice Cube shows up and like tries to like hit him with a bat or something. Oh, I think he actually says I got my bat like early on in the movie or something. I don't know. He tries to like hit him, but like John Voight's not completely, he knows something's up. So he sees Ice Cube coming. He escapes, whatever. He knows he's like, did you think I'm stupid? And then he kisses J-Lo again before he throws her away from him. I thought that was
classy.
Funny.
And then who comes through the window? Is it David Hyde, John Jacob Astor?
Ismay, Mr. Ismay from Titanic.
Yeah.
Comes through the window.
Mr. Who?
Ismay.
It's Jonathan
white star,
Hyde, right?
White Star Line.
Jonathan Hyde.
Yeah, because you're thinking of David Hyde Pierce,
I am, yeah.
Which I also thought of a lot during this movie.
Yeah, actually, no, that is exactly who I'm thinking of.
he comes through the window with his golf club because he's been working on his shot all
Oh, yeah. Setup and payoff, yeah. Baby.
Setups and payoffs.
Oh, that's right. I didn't register that was the weapon he was using, but yeah, duh.
And they beat him up. They tie him up.
But it's scarcely the last we see of him.
He's so fucking cool. He keeps coming back. He just keeps coming back. Yeah. He's there with Owen Wilson's girlfriend, who has almost no other film credits. I looked her up. She's in Eight-Legged Freaks.
Oh.
And she's going to kill John Voight because she blames him for her boyfriend's death, mm-hmm. and as she should. Mm-hmm. And just more great lines from John Voight. He's talking about how you can never look someone you kill in the eye or it'll haunt you forever. like they just gave
and
him.
And then he does like some Black Widow shit. Yeah. Like wraps his legs around her while his arms are bound to like kill her.
Yeah. He has so much character development. He chokes her out with his legs. And then I think throws her body overboard or something. But yeah. Then he's able to just escape from his being tied to a post mm-hmm. to menace the rest of the crew.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit.
Fucking Titanic dude is like, winds up a waterfall hanging from a tree with the anaconda.
Oh, yeah.
That was an amazing scene, too. They both fall into the water. He does not die in that moment, actually. It's a near miss. And then my and Steven's favorite part of the movie is right after that, where we see a waterfall running backwards.
It defies the laws of physics.
Did you notice this, Chris?
I didn't notice this. To be honest, this part of the movie, it was real hard for me to keep up with all the action. And that was
happening. Oh, yeah. It was all the action. It was just so action-packed that you just couldn't.
It is pretty action-packed, I would say. I mean, this is in the last 20 minutes, which is the most action-packed part. But like the ship is supposed to be the boat is supposed to be reversing, and for whatever reason
they just didn't get the shot.
Yep. And so they ran a piece of footage of the boat moving forward backwards, and I mean it does like last what, 3 seconds or something? It's yeah. I wouldn't even say 5 seconds, but it's still long enough at least for me to notice, oh, that waterfall is going up, not down. Yep.
It's pretty jarring.
That was amazing. But we get down to, I'm trying to remember the sequence of all these crazy events now.
It actually, yeah. I was just teasing Chris. It is a lot all at once.
It is, yeah.
And it's kind of, I don't even remember exactly how it ended. And I watched it
night. Some point, John Voight gets fucking eaten.
Well, he gets incapacitated somehow.
He gets tranquilized. They hit him with the snake tranquilizer that he's been bringing along to tranquilize the snake.
And then because he's still one track mind, he wants to bring this snake in alive to sell it to, I don't know, Siegfried.
Because he's got like Siegfried and Roy. Because he's got like snake skins in his like treasure chest.
Yeah.
He's a snake hunter.
And they tranquilize him and he falls off the boat, but Ice Cube is like, damn, the tranquilizer dart fell out of his back when he went into the water. Yeah. And they're like, all right, well, he's coming back for sure. But they find a building.
But he has been eaten at that point, right?
No, he hasn't been eaten.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. He comes back four times.
Legendary.
Yeah.
Can't keep him down.
I mean, Freddie's got nothing on this guy. Yeah, Trump, Freddie have nothing on this guy.
Remember when we thought Trump was dead because Access Hollywood tape came out?
Yeah.
Simpler times.
That was just the snake tranquilizer.
That was nothing.
Yeah, that dart fell right out.
That was him. That was his, John Voight's boat being stuck at the beginning of the movie.
Or was the felony conviction the snake tranquilizer? Like, how many more comebacks are we to expect for Trump?
It was just the opening crawl.
Yeah. Ugh.
Snakes don't crawl.
I wasn't trying to make a snake.
Oh,
pun.
I read it as a snake pun. I
was trying to make an anaconda pun.
Anyway, so they find a, I want to call it a base. They find some sort of building.
Yeah.
That has like, it has like a fucking smokestack, okay? But like it's an industrial building.
Yeah, because they're in a precarious situation because most of their fuel has rolled off the boat. They need more fuel.
And they are
in some anaconda conflict, all the fuel fell off the boat. Yeah.
So they're like, oh, we'll find some fuel there. And they do. They find lots of fuel there. And then John Voight shows up. And
why did you say it like that?
Listen, don't make fun of my accent. So John Voight. This is also kind of a funny transition because Ice Cube and J-Lo are both looking at the fuel like, oh, hell yeah. Then John Voight comes up behind him and like with a log and just hits the camera. He hits the camera. And then they're both tied up. Which I assume he hits Ice Cube and it's not a problem for him to overpower J-Lo. So that's probably what
but
actually
happened.
But
it is hilarious that it plays like they both got knocked out. By just clonked their heads together.
By hitting the camera, he incapacitates both of them.
Oh my god, that's so stupid. I didn't even notice that.
And then they're tied up in this building, and another great scene. John Voight is bleeding a monkey that because he's been killing monkeys to use as right. bait. And he throws a bucket of monkey blood all over.
Which we know because he immediately says, "It's monkey blood, bitch."
We saw the monkey's bloody paw 20 seconds ago. And he's established he uses these monkeys as bait. So he covers them in blood to attract the anaconda. And attract the anaconda he does. And he has a whole fucking...
He also shows us bone dust.
Yeah. Because apparently the anaconda shits out bone dust. That's how I read that. Right?
I don't even know. I wasn't even sure what to make of it at that point.
No clue.
Because they're in like the anaconda's territory, and he's like scraping a handful of like ash. Basically,
I'm just envisioning
floor.
The snake shitting like pure dry dust
puff.
Now.
Yeah,
puff the magic
smoke.
Dragon.
Yeah. I don't know. But he's got a whole setup like fucking. Is it Donald Pleasance who does who traps Michael Myers in the net in Halloween 5?
I've trauma blocked that.
Well, the part where they in the end of Halloween 5 where they cover Michael Myers with a net and just like hit him with a 2x4 a bunch of times, that's basically John Voight's strategy in
it is,
capturing this anaconda. Yeah. He has a net that goes over, I think, J-Lo, Ice Cube, and the anaconda, and then he's trying to tranquilize it, but it gets fucked up, of course.
Not all three of them.
No?
I think he just gets the anaconda in there, right?
It's hard to tell.
I think it's just the anaconda. I don't think it is hard to tell, but whatever.
And so he's trying to tranquilize this thing, but of course it doesn't go the way he wants it to, and he gets eaten. John Voight gets eaten. He takes it like a man. He doesn't, you know.
But we got that opening crawl for a reason.
Yeah.
Because we haven't seen the anaconda regurgitate any prey just to kill and eat again, as the crawl told us it does. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, and I don't think we properly covered this, but what an insane thing to put in the crawl. That the anaconda is so evil that it regurgitates its prey just so it can kill it and eat it again.
Well, it plays with its food. I don't know if that's evil.
That's deranged.
I thought it was. It said that I read it as it regurgitates it so it can kill again.
Yeah.
Like, so that there's room in its stomach for it to eat another person.
No, I don't think
what?
So.
Yeah, I thought that it was, oh, it's going
oh,
to.
Oh, so it can go kill a separate person.
Yeah.
Oh,
but that's just.
That's also
that's
deranged.
Bulimia.
Ooh.
Why would it only keep the second person in there?
It kills for sport. Because it doesn't have room for two people in there.
Yeah, I mean, regardless, the implication is that it kills for sport, which is a hilarious implication.
I think it has an eating disorder. I hate to say it. Trigger warning. Escape. Trigger warning, but...
Damn. Yeah. Is this Drag Me to Hell?
Ooh.
Yeah, so... And you know what? I was so happy because I was like, I need John Voight to come back and keep fighting this thing after he gets
for eaten. The second... Third time, second time.
And I guess they thought that would stretch, push our imaginations, push the that would push our disbelief too far if they had him come back and still be okay. So, because he has been constricted at this point. He's pretty well dead.
Yeah.
But he does get regurgitated. And he is still with it a little bit.
Oh, enough to wink.
Yeah, he winks at J-Lo. And that's it.
And he's covered in mucus. He looks like shit. Like, he may as well be a corpse. And yet, he still looks up and gives her a little wink like, yeah, you're fucked.
Oh, we also get the nope shot, the internal point of view snake stomach
Which,
shot.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That was great.
As I was watching it, I thought Jordan Peele has seen this movie.
Yeah.
And is a fan.
Yeah. What a great reference point. Which, I mean, Anaconda probably swiped it from somebody, but pretty awesome that if Peele also swiped it.
See, the last 15 minutes of this movie are great.
I was just about to say, how are you having this much fun describing it and you didn't have fun watching the movie?
The last 15 minutes are great, but the last 15 minutes are so different than the rest of the
movie.
It is
very concentrated, yeah.
So, so much more fun than the rest of the movie.
Yeah. But yeah, then we wind up with J-Lo leading the snake up the smokestack while Ice Cube prepares to blow up the snake and the smokestack from below.
Using all dynamite. The fuel cans.
Oh, right. Fuel cans, around. Not dynamite. Yeah.
Which the dynamite, I thought for sure they were going to use that dynamite to blow up the snake, right?
Yeah.
Maybe they decided that wasn't interesting enough.
Yeah. But yeah, we do wind up with like the smokestack exploding and the flaming snake falling into the river, which was another moment where I cackled aloud.
But not before J-Lo's stuck at the top of the smokestack, like trying to get out. And Ice Cube's like, you have to open the door. You have to push on the side where the hinges aren't or something. She's like pushing on the door, but on the wrong side.
Ice Cube just like doing door mechanic explanations.
Yeah.
Just
Paul,
doing,
don't
just
push.
Doing a This Old House episode.
And then, yeah, so it blows up. But you can tell, by the way, you can tell that's not going to do it.
No. Oh, yeah, the snake comes back almost as many times as John Voight.
Yes. It's harder to kill than Michael Myers, yeah. I think.
It's on fire.
Although then it immediately falls in the water, which I was like, okay, it was fun seeing it on fire, but this is not going to be
I
enough.
Know the snake's not going to die in the water.
It's extinguished right? immediately, yeah. The snake thrives in the water.
Yeah. How do they kill the snake?
So the snake's on fire, and we're like, all right, they did the big thing. This should kill the snake.
Right, because they've shot it in the head multiple times at this point,
yes.
too.
Yeah.
And it's fully engulfed in fire, and then it ends up like going rawr, and sinking. And we're like, all right, it's probably going to come back, right? And then it comes up through the dock that J-Lo's sitting on and starts menacing her. And Ice Cube kills it with like a fire axe or something.
Yeah.
He's in the head, chop, and it's clearly dead. The head's been split open.
Except there's a bunch of sequels, I think. So I wonder if this specific one comes back.
Well, we see all the babies. There's Anaconda
babies. Oh, yeah,
babies.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And John Voight like seems to think they're so cute, too. Constantly referring, go back to your mama, babies.
I love snakes, actually, so I identify with that. Especially
I
snake
like them
babies.
Too.
So cute.
Yeah, you're afraid of snakes, Chris?
No.
All right, just checking in.
I would probably be afraid of an anaconda.
No step probably. On snake.
No step on snake, yeah.
maybe that's how John Voight got into right-wing politics. He got too in love with snakes and he saw No Step on Snake.
That should be like the headline of all our like our episode description and our social media posts for this No Step on Snake.
Then they go to the boat and Eric Stoltz wakes up. He's like, what did I miss? And then they're like, oh, look, it's the tribe
they
we've
find
been looking
the tribe,
for the
yeah.
whole time. And there's some questionable depictions of uncontacted tribespeople rowing up in their little canoes. And then that's the end of the movie.
Yeah.
So they're going to get their documentary after all.
Well, and I wondered like who those people were that they actually showed at the end. Because they looked fairly authentic. They didn't look just like actors playing tribes. And I was like, who did you actually exploit for this 2 seconds?
It's Gary Oldman.
Of footage. Yeah, it was Gary Oldman. All of them were played by Gary Oldman.
They were all played by Rory Kinnear.
Well... That's Anaconda. That's your movie.
That's your movie.
Summer popcorn classic.
Truly. I had a great time with this. I would rewatch this. Unlike Late Night with the Devil, to bring it full circle, because like I had a great time with Late Night with the Devil, but it's one of those movies where I feel like I don't think I would enjoy it as much without sort of the element of surprise. Anaconda, I want to relive this at some point. I think I will rewatch this, especially on like some, you know, chill party night where I have a few people over at my house. We're drinking and it's like, let's watch Anaconda.
Let me know when you do that and I'll join you for the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, there you go.
What are we watching next month?
So next month, you know, we're all three of us World War II buffs. I would say,
are we?
Chris might be an expert.
I never trust someone who's too into World War II history. I actually know nothing about World War II history because... I don't want to be that guy.
I would not count myself as a World War II buff.
Well, we went to
the
museum.
You're referring to that we all went to the
National
World War II Museum.
Yeah, we spent like 12 hours at the museum.
Yeah, we were there a long time.
Great, it was a great time.
It was.
I still get emails from them, and I have not unsubscribed.
Oh, shit.
So we're going to watch the 2020 film Shadow in the Cloud. It's a lean hour and 23 minutes.
Ooh.
You may have heard of this movie.
Sounds familiar.
Carrying a top secret package on a mission during World War II, a pilot faces skepticism from an all-male bomber crew and a malevolent presence on board.
Is this a horror movie or like a Clint Eastwood directed
movie? This is a horror movie, and it stars Chloe Grace Moretz.
Oh, fantastic.
Okay.
So I look forward to watching 2020 Shadow in the Cloud on Netflix for the month of July.
Well, that's next month on every horror movie on Netflix. And in the meantime, again, follow us on social media at AmonCast. Check out the Discord. Link is in the show notes. And review us on your podcast provider of choice. Until next time, I'm Patrick, who has no S in his name to elongate.
I'm Chris.
And I'm back to just being Steven.
And we'll see you next time.
Did they ever attack Obama's home or Clinton's? And why not? Because President Trump knows that the swamp are all lies, and he once drowned them. And they're all afraid you will see the truths. Wake up, America. See this lie.